Hello, Annie Trenders. Welcome to the Girl Talku, hosted by the ladies of Anime Trending. If you're looking for a nice tea and deep dive analysis about otaku things, you've come to the right place. We love our conversation and discussion, and we're back with another fun topic on the table. My name is Gracie, and I'm joined by...
Hello, I am Isabel, and...
This is Agnes.
So, without further ado, the Girl Talku today will be about vampires in anime. I don't know if this is an observation that the two of you have made, but I feel like vampires in anime specifically has had kind of a resurgence. So admittedly, this isn't my observation. Actually, my roommate first made the observation. She's like, I feel like there's been a lot more anime about vampires recently. And I was like, really? Like, is it time for the cycle to come back? Because you guys all know, like, you know, trends and fashions and like story elements that people like tends to go in a cycle. And so I decided to look it up, and I really looked at sort of the lineup of all the anime recently, and I was like, huh, you're right. There has been a lot of, like, vampire stuff recently that wasn't present before. It's like it cycled back. But obviously, instead of the shiny, sparkly vampire that Twilight and the Twilight series had really inspired sort of as a trend, I feel like now they're kind of going back to the creepier roots of vampires, question mark. But definitely, there's been a resurgence in vampires in anime. So today, we kind of just want to talk about some of the different elements of vampires that we've seen in regards to how anime portrays them, whether they're just that hot, sparkly vampire that Twilight made really popular, or whether there's different shades and different elements and different portrayals to this mythical creature, because vampires as a whole has been a mythological creature that's been very, very popular for quite a long time now. So this isn't anything new. Vampires aren't like a brand new, a modern sort of element that was created for story. It's been around for centuries. With that being said, I believe that Isabel is hopping us off today. So Isabel, you know, for this topic, what are some vampires in anime that you've seen and observed that you just think is interesting or has been very iconic to you that you just kind of want to spotlight?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The first one that I found interesting that was relatively recent is Call of the Night.
Yep, I have that on my list. Don't worry, I have a full list.
Okay. Awesome. Just because I didn't think I would like it. Like, it's been a while since I've seen, you know, an anime has, you know, vampires in them, maybe. Maybe it's like one type of character. But, you know, for a full anime to focus on vampires and kind of like, obviously Call of the Night is about kind of like that darker atmosphere or like at night and just like, it's more of a calming type of anime as well. And so I thought this was a very interesting mix between kind of like that slice of life, but then also having that, you know, mysterious vampire kind of lore. And then also the characters themselves, like Nazuna, for example, she's really pretty. Like a lot of them are very pretty. So kind of like that, you know, idea of not sparkling vampires, but very, you know, attractive looking vampires. And I thought this was a, you know, great anime to at least see having that come back and having that interaction between Cole, who's obviously human that wants to become a vampire. I think you see that a lot, obviously, in vampire shows in general. And then kind of the details of like how to become a vampire. And, you know, there's that romantic aspect as well, where, you know, he has to fall for her, things like that in order to make sure that he actually becomes a vampire. But because he's so young, you know, does he actually need to become a vampire? A lot of people would say no. I think there's this older, I forget, like an adult who actually tells him, like, you know, you shouldn't be going down that route or something like that. So there's a lot of decisions to be made for him. But yeah, this is something different that I hadn't seen in other, you know, anime. And so I thought it was something that I wanted to highlight. Did you have any thoughts on that, Gracie? Like, how did you feel when you watched that show as well?
Yeah, so Call of the Night, I actually really, really loved it. I love the story and the way it was written. And I love how honestly complex the vampires are in actuality, because it's a little grooming-ish, and it's like kind of purposeful as well, because they talk about how those are their children when they create new vampires, but at the same time, they can only create the vampire if the vampire falls in love with them in the first place, but it's their child. And so it's a very weird, like, twisted take. And I think that it's interesting how there's so many, I guess, like, different elements and angles and perspectives it takes on it. Because we have, like, the main character, Nanase, who never was interested in creating others. Like, and I think they said that vampires have a natural tendency to seek out other people and try to get them to fall in love with them and then create more vampires that way, kind of in a way that humans naturally want to procreate. That's their way of procreating. But Nazuna doesn't seem really interested in that, and she's, like, not created any vampires. And then there were women in there, and also a young boy as well. I mean, he's not a young boy because he's been living for a long time, but I'm guessing when he turned, he was a young boy. They've been pretty consistently procreating, but the ways they go about it is very different. And then and on top of that, there's also humans who act very vampire-like, but they're not. Like Akira, who is like who is Kole Yamori's childhood friend. She's like up super early in the morning, and then it's just like, and she's sort of like, she's so like, she walks to school at like 3 a.m. in the morning, which is like the hours of when the vampires are actually awake. It's also heavily insinuated that she has depression, and so she has trouble sleeping. But it's just like the way that they kind of like blur the line between vampires and humans, I think, are very interesting. But I think the part that really sold me about their sort of depiction of vampires and how interesting I find it to be is that Nazuna in particular, the reason why she doesn't procreate is that she later admitted to Ko that life as a vampire is just boring because you never die. And you just live forever. And you kind of see it, too. And I mentioned this in actually the Anime Trending podcast that I'm like, there's a purposeful, artful direction that the anime took. Because when Nazuna's with Ko, you know, they're outside. And the backgrounds of, like, the night sky is absolutely gorgeous. And it looks like, and it looks almost supernatural in that. I mean, it is a supernatural anime. But, like, the sky looks supernatural itself. Like, it's magical. But then you go to her apartment and it's like this expanse of an empty room with like lack of colors and lack of furniture. And it's just this empty space with her and a TV and like a bed and white walls. And that was it. And I was like, that had to be purposeful. And it was purposeful because Nazuna later revealed that being a vampire for her, it's boring. You just like live every day in youth forever and nothing really changes. And that obviously is in conjunction to how her room is like, which is what she actually feels about vampirism versus sort of the romanticized take that Cole took when he's with her with the sky that looks almost fairy tale like. And so I just like that element a lot. And I think like immortality is a pretty consistent theme. We see it in Frieren too, where it's like there's the pain of losing the people that you love because you never age, but then the other people do and they leave you behind. But I think boredom is something that maybe not, like, immortality, like, themes in anime doesn't really explore. Like, we're used to exploring grief through immortality, but not, like, boredom. And Nazuna is, like, the perfect representation of that, of boredom, through her vampiric nature of just never aging. And so that's the part that I really liked in Call of the Night. So that's my whole spiel on vampires for that. Did you catch that part, Isabel, or did you like that part? Or was there like another part of the vampirism that you liked in Call of the Night?
Yeah, I think that was the main part actually, that, you know, it was so exciting when they were together all the time, but then, you know, when they were apart, even Cole was looking for her a lot too. But yeah, there's that aspect where, you know, what does she do during the day? He wonders about that a lot. And then sometimes she's just missing, you know, and he's always asking, where is she? Where does she go? What does she do? And then when you see, you know, what she actually does and what the other vampires do, just hanging out, yeah, just that boredom aspect. And that's what makes me curious, you know, if there is a season two on that, is how they'll you know, change that. I think it also took kind of like a different type. It became a little bit more, I guess, fight heavy, action heavy towards the end as well. So that kind of make me more excited as well. So are we taking this kind of like slow paced type of show into something, you know, more combative? We see more vampires, or is it just, you know, a little arc that we're going to see?
Yeah, because at the end they even introduce like, okay, so all the vampires you've met have been good and they get consent from their people that they bite to become vampires. But what if they don't get consent? Don't forget those people exist too, because we saw it with the teacher who had been hiding himself away for like, how many years was it? Like several years, just hiding himself away, like starving himself because he didn't want to fully transform into a vampire, and he knew that he could starve to death that way. And it was like he wasn't consented to the situation and he got turned. So he was likely tricked by a vampire to fall in love with her or him, and he didn't realize it, and then got bit. So yeah, it's like it adds another dangerous element to it that changes things. And I did like that, because I'm like, it's complicated. If vampires are like these thinking creatures, they're gonna have complicated societies and morals as well, and that's exactly what happened in Call of the Night. So but yeah, Agnes, did you ever watch Call of the Night?
Nope, I never watched Call of the Night when it came out.
Okay, got it. Well, I guess in that case, there's nothing much to add unless Agnes has any questions.
Nope, no questions from me.
Alrighty, so that's your first one. Isabel, what is your second pick for vampires in anime that has either been iconic to you, or you've seen recently, or you just think it's a different take than other stuff you've seen?
Yeah, another one that I thought was a different take that I enjoyed watching is Zervamp. I don't know if seen that one, but I personally like that one because it's a different take on the vampire genre in general, or made me more interested because the vampires themselves are kind of also a representation of the seven sins.
Yes.
And what really sold me was definitely Kuro, who's kind of like the main vampire who's with our protagonist. And Kuro's other name is Sleepy Ash, and so he's kind of the Servamp of Sloth. And I just really like the fact that when he really doesn't like being exposed to the sun, but then when he does, he turns into this really cute cat. And so yeah, so it was a funny moment when I saw like our main protagonist Mahiru, just like, he's like, oh, it's so dark in here, let me open the windows, you know, or, you know, let in the light. And he lets in the light, and Kuro's like, no, don't open it, because I'm gonna turn, or like, I want to stay like in his human form. But yeah, he just like pops into a cat. If he closes the thing, he can turn back. But he can do that voluntarily too, I guess, when you see that later in the series. But I thought that was just interesting. A lot of the vampires in the series, you know, have their like kind of like their cute, chibi little, I guess, character. Not necessarily an animal, but it could be like a puppet or something like that. And then the kind of this, it combines so many aspects together, like that Seven Sins thing, and then like the idea of like a master and servant, so kind of similar to like the Fate series, where they have the person who provides the blood, who is usually the human, and then they call that their like Eve in the series. And but then like there's just so many characters that they introduce in this 12 episode series that honestly, I also thought it was a little bit chaotic in how they were introducing a lot of the vampires and who's getting thrown in. And it's not just like the pairs of the two. They also introduce kind of like subclasses, which ends up being one of the classmates of Mahiro, which I thought was a nice twist as well. Adding more people into the mix that they can, you know, have other like mini vampires or subclass of vampires. But then like, even if the Eves or the humans do get bit, they're just providing blood for the vampires. They're not necessarily turning into vampires themselves. And yeah, they just combine so many elements into that. Not only that, there's also something like, you know how in Fate they have the crest thing on their like hand? So Servamp also has something similar where they can have that on their like wrists, that they can like summon their weapon that's related to them and their vampire. So Yeah, I just really like that. So I never really see that with vampire anime. It's just kind of, you know, it could be really as simple as, you know, Call of the Night, where they have their own society, things like that. They focus on kind of one aspects or two aspects. But then Servamp brings in all these like fantasy aspects and other other things that you don't really expect. And that's what made it fun for me to watch. And then I also really like the character design as well. They definitely had to go all out in terms of like giving people different, you know, looks and different personalities as well. And I think it definitely helps that they had the, you know, seven sins, so they could classify that and you can classify it in your head as well. But yes, those are my initial thoughts. Gracie, it seems like you've seen that. Did you have any initial thoughts on that as well? Or did you not like it? Or
it was like disappointing to me. I think I wanted more from the anime. So keep in mind, I did not read the source material. I really wanted badly to like it because of Kuro and like the cat form. And obviously that's very appealing whenever you see like a black cat chibi in any sort of anime. I did like the Deadly Sins thing. I'm always a big fan of any sort of seven deadly sins showing up in anime because I think it's always interesting as to how people interpret it and how they interpret the sins. Every single time, it seems like the author has a different idea of which sin is the one good sin versus the others that are bad. Or sometimes they make them all bad or they're actually all protagonists. I like whenever the Seven Deadly Sins shows up, I'm really excited because I really like people's interpretations of it. But I think something about, you kind of mentioned already, where they kind of like just introduce all the characters at once as quickly as possible. That wasn't really ideal for me because I felt like I didn't really get to know the characters. And so because of that, the anime felt kind of shallow for me. So I never really got into it like I hoped I would, especially with the character designs. And I thought that it was interesting that they were all vampires instead. So I can't really say much for the vampires in Servamp simply because I kind of wish that it was better written or at least better adapted, because I don't know, it could be actually quite well written in manga format. You know, we've seen bad adaptations. We've seen that it can destroy the source material pretty badly if it doesn't adapt well. So I just don't know what it's like for the source material, but definitely for the anime, I kind of wanted more. So yeah. Did you watch that one, Agnes, Servamp?
I didn't watch it. I read the manga very briefly when it first started it first started reading or scanslating, but then I ended up dropping it because it wasn't really scanslating that many chapters when I was reading it, so I kind of fell off the hype bandwagon of, oh, this is interesting, or, oh, this is very similar to Fate, so I'm sorry to say I'm not very helpful in this situation.
I guess based on what you remember of what you read in the manga, would you say that the pacing was better? Because that was a big issue I had with the anime.
I mean, I would say, like, it was, I only read the intro chapter, so I can't really comment if the pacing was good or not.
Ah, okay, I see. So
yeah, at the time that it was being scanslated online, only a couple chapters had been out.
Oh, like 5, basically.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I see. All right, but yeah, that's, so I guess that's our take on, for Servamp. Sorry, Isabel.
Oh, no, that's fine. I just wanted to bring it up because I hadn't seen it in a long time, so.
Yeah.
But yes.
But Kuro is very iconic, so there is that.
Exactly. But yeah, I'm excited to hear what you guys have in store, so.
Alrighty then. So Agnes, then in this case, it is up to you. So I know that you typically are a big fan of vampires. Well, I feel like you like the creepy kind of vampires, but maybe not sort of the later modern interpretation of vampires. So I'm kind of curious to hear what you've picked for vampires in anime. And for everyone listening, no, we are not going to mention Vampire Knight this time. So we are not talking about it. We're going to look outwards towards it. So what did you end up choosing for vampires in anime that you've seen that kind of stood out to you or you found iconic, for instance?
Yeah, absolutely. I do like that how you mentioned earlier in the podcast how there's been like a big trend for vampires recently, where we had a lot of vampire type of animes like Vampire Knight and things like that in the early 2000s, and then it kind of died down, it gave way to the isekai, and then it's slowly kind of building itself back up, which I thought was really interesting. And no, I'm not going to talk about Castlevania because I talk about Castlevania too often.
I was also kind of curious, but okay.
So I purposely told myself I have to give myself time and research to watch other things that have vampires that is not Castlevania, because if I talk about Castlevania, that'll just be the end of the podcast. That's all I'm going to spend like 40 minutes talking about, which is not very conducive. So I want to start with a show that I think was probably the most iconic in terms of vampires and might have even restarted the whole trend of adding more vampire type of stories into anime, or at least adapting it while other vampires were being written in things like light novels and in manga. And I think the most influential would actually be JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
There's vampires in that?
Yes, in the very beginning parts of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is actually vampires.
I didn't know that! Oh!
Yes, you didn't know that because you don't watch JoJo's.
That's right, that's right.
So yeah, most people, when they look at JoJo's, they wouldn't think that it's about vampires, because the thing is that Araki Sensei, the author and mangaka behind JoJo's, has a memory loss sort of thing, where he kind of forgets about characters that have certain powers, and he changes it very frequently throughout each iteration of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. So the original JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, starring Jonathan Joestar, and then his other descendants, Joseph Joestar and Jotaro, Kujo, all have encounters with vampires. At the very beginning, Jonathan Joestar encounters a stone mask, which was a relic that was retrieved from like South America. And the stone mask would actually turn people into either ghouls or zombies, which is very typical of other vampire type of media, and also ultimately vampires. In part two of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which is Battle Tendency, which is my favorite, it talks more about the reason behind the stone mask and why people turn into vampires. And then part three and four with Jotaro Kujo is where they finally square off against Dio, who is considered like the ultimate vampire within the story. However, Dio doesn't make much of an appearance anymore in the later JoJo series, and the enemies of the JoJo series changes from vampires to other type of monsters or creatures or people at the end of the day. So that's why when you think about vampires in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, you don't really think about it because it's not currently aired in the later half of the series, but rather in the beginning half of the series and how it sets up for this whole dynasty of Jonathans, Josephs, and Jotaros type of thing.
Yeah, I totally didn't expect it either when I started the series. Like when I
right,
right. Like when you hear about JoJo's, I'm like, okay, the character design, these guys. But then when I started watching, I'm like, wait a second, Dio's a vampire. Like this vampire.
Dio's
stuff?
A vampire. Yeah, he gets turned into a vampire because he lusts for power at the very beginning of part one, and despite what people said about the stone mask, he still puts it on and he turns into a vampire.
Does he look like a vampire? Like with the fangs?
Absolutely not. Araki's designs are off the charts and off the walls. They don't look like anything that we consider as a vampire. You know, like when you think of Dracula from Castlevania, dark, brooding, right. Pale skin. Yeah. Dio is a shock of blonde hair. Dio's British, out of all things, right? He's a British lad from East London Chapel or something. Mm. Very rugged type of kid, grew up on the streets, and then put on the stone mask, and now like he's a really powerful blonde vampire who has all these crazy powers and people are trying to defeat him. So
okay, so
I wanted to spotlight at least JoJo's for that aspect because it's such an iconic series from the 1980s, but because it had such a big revival or a restart animation in the mid-2000s and propagating that forward, I think has also inspired many other series to start looking at vampires again as a trope.
I have to ask, because I feel, so obviously, I don't watch JoJo, but I do have some basic knowledge because of what a meme it's become, And
yes, yes.
Why do people in the JoJo fandom not talk about the fact that he's a vampire? I feel like they would talk about it, no?
No, No, it's because people are very enamored with the way how wacky the series turns out. Because the title is truly a JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. We're literally an adventure that is so bizarre that things change very quickly.
Oh.
So a lot more fans are very focused on that because every single part in JoJo changes very dramatically. The powers change very dramatically. So for example, in part 1 to part 4... Well, technically, between part 1 and part 3-ish, there's a power that's called Haman, or the Ripple, that is used to defeat vampires. But because Dio is the only living vampire at the time, he also develops a secondary power, which now the other main characters have to develop, which is called Stands. So as each iteration goes, a lot of things changes, a lot of things become more complicated, more bizarre, more strange, that fans have to keep up with the strangeness instead of focus on the fact that there's no continuity. And then the other thing I mentioned earlier is that Araki-sensei has memory loss. This is a meme in the JoJo fandom, but also kind of true in the sense that Araki-sensei also doesn't remember what characters he puts in the series and what other powers he puts in the series, which is very funny because when people ask him in interviews, like, oh, are you thinking about bringing back this character or this power? He's kind of like, I put that in my series? It's very famous. It's very famous in the Reddits. So in a way, it's such a huge meme that nobody cares about the consistency of the series and everyone just goes along with it.
I see. Okay.
It's a series that I don't think you'll enjoy, Gracie, but if you think about JoJo's as truly a bizarre adventure that you have to come in with zero expectations, zero plot relevance, I think you may enjoy. But knowing you as the type of person who likes plot, climax, conclusion, it might not
well,
be
well, okay, I'm starting to understand. So I'm kind of watching Hit Mike because my roommate's super into Hit Mike. It's currently airing the second season. Anime makes sense. Nothing about that world makes sense. And I remember when I watched that first season, I just had so many questions. And my roommate was like, stop questioning it and just embrace it for the fact that it doesn't make sense. And I was like, I'm trying. So, I finally managed to do it in the second season. I've embraced it now and I've started to enjoy it a lot more because I stopped questioning all these things. And I feel like that's probably going to be the journey I would have to take, right, for JoJo's, is that I just gotta have to question everything. And then
yeah,
it would be,
but you have to also keep in mind that JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is even worse because it's literally like the shonen fanboy fantasy.
Oh.
Instead of Hip Mike, where Hip Mike is the shoujo girl fantasy because there's all of these like cute leads that are very attractive and music is what brings them together sort of thing. But in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, it's very shonen, it's very seinen altogether, very ora-da-da-da-da as they like do punches and come up with like absurd lines and stuff like that too. So it's another breed of head empty, just need to watch the anime.
Oh yeah. If anything that brings them together is just basically like Joseph's bloodline and Dio's.
Yeah, the Joseph bloodline.
That's it.
That's the only thing that's consistent, yeah. Is that every single Joseph has a descendant that will continue.
See,
the series.
Okay, that leads me to my question, because Isabel, you know, I feel like you question things more than me sometimes, and yet I can tell that you've seen it. So how did you manage to do it?
I didn't. That's why I stopped in like part 3. I'm like, I don't understand this, and yeah, it's hard. I obviously have a lot of questions and logic doesn't apply to this series, so.
I stopped questioning it long before, but I just haven't finished it because it's just so long. I haven't been able to sit down to actually finish it altogether. I originally made a bet with my friends who had been longtime JoJo fans, and I said, if I can binge watch JoJo in an entire summer season, I bet I could do it, and I did.
Wow!
So it's kind of sitting in my docket.
Well, I shouldn't
that,
be
that's
surprised
the true story
with
of why
girl
I didn't
who binge watch One Piece of all things, so yeah.
I hope you know I didn't binge watch
did,
One Piece.
No?
No, I watch it in like parts over several years.
Okay.
I only binge watch like Wano because that's the currently airing arc, but I've been watching One Piece very steadily for several years. Not really a binge watch.
Okay. Okay, well, I got that wrong, but I'm impressed nonetheless that you managed to binge watch it, so.
I mean, I'm not done with JoJo's. I still have part 4, 5, that's and 6 right, to finish. That's right, that's right.
They put out so many more parts, too. Ugh, it's hard to keep track of sometimes. Okay, so, all right, I totally see how this is obviously very iconic, and I can totally see how it brought back attention to vampires as a whole being used in anime. So what is your second one, then, that you want to spotlight in regards to vampires in anime?
The second one that I want to spotlight, and I do have a third one that I want to like briefly mention because I thought it was interesting, but I'll go with my second one, is a vampire series that I thought was really iconic for the time that it came out, where people were really into the edgy vampire, has like superpowers and are very much feared throughout the continent because they are literally monsters, is from Hellsing Ultimate.
Oh, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Which is a series that I hadn't been able to touch in a long, long, long time because it was one of those old animes that came out at the same time as other hyper-violent animes like Black Lagoon and things like that. So I never had a chance to sit down and actually listen or watch Hellsing. And after perusing a couple of Reddit threads, people were going back and forth between, you can watch the original Hellsing anime, but it doesn't quite line up with the manga ending of Hellsing. Or you can watch Hellsing Ultimate, which is a... it's a, I think, like a 12 episode OVA season, so each episode is about like 40 to 50 minutes that coincides more with the manga. And while watching Hellsing Ultimate, I can see that as an adult I don't really enjoy it, but as a kid I would have really, really enjoyed it. And the thing about Hellsing Ultimate was that it's very predictable in terms of plot. But it's the gregarious violence that my younger self would have really,
you
really
answered
liked
my question. Rather okay. than the
yes, rather than my adult self who's kind of like looking for plot or looking something that's more complicated. So the events of Hellsing Ultimate starts off with a young woman named Integra, who is the successor to the Hellsing organization, which is a royal chivalric knight order that was only recently founded within the last like 100 years or so. She's being persecuted by as a family head. And to prevent herself from being persecuted, she basically revives the family's darkest secret, which is Alucard, a vampire that has been living underneath the, I guess, like the prison
so
or like the slums of
Alucard
the mansion.
So this is an Alucard as well. Okay.
This is an Alucard. Yes, there's no Dracula. There's only Alucard. That's the only thing that matters in Hellsing Ultimate. It's really funny because the subs for this call it Alucard, so with an R instead of an L, but clearly it's Alucard, right? So she brings back Alucard, who is now the trump card of the Hellsing organization. There are many other organizations that exist throughout the series that are anti-vampire. So, for example, you have the Vatican Church. The Vatican have a secret 13th, like, force, like, the there's, like, 12 divisions, but the 13th one is specifically designed to pursue beasts and monsters like vampires, which is kind of, like, a play on words for, like, how there's the 12 disciples of Jesus, and the 13th one is Judas. Mm-hmm. Right? So they're considered the sinners who would go out to persecute vampires and beasts. And so they're always in competition with the Hellsing organization that is Protestant. And then later down the line, they discover that there is an exterior force that comes, as you can see, it gets more and more complicated, right? There's an exterior force called Millennium that was a subset of Nazi soldiers that were residing in South America that have unlocked the potential to turn normal humans into vampires without needing the assistance of vampires and basically create a massive army that would go against Alucard, who had been now reawakened in the past like 20 something years. And so Hellsing Ultimate as a result is basically a big timeline of when Alucard basically gets revived, quote unquote, and goes through all of these time changes, revealing all his powers to the world and trying to defeat the Millennium organization that threatens to bring about basically World War III. And as a result, you can see that the plot gets kind of wonky at times. And this is basically because a lot of the plot is very much padded by the gregarious violence that is shown in every single episode. Funnily enough, I would put Hellsing Ultimate on my second screen, and on my first screen, I would like do something else, and then I would look over and be like, oh, okay, that happens, and then go back to my other screen and do my other thing. So I am sorry to say that Hellsing Ultimate, I think I would have really loved it as a kid, and I would have been like, yeah, Hellsing Ultimate. But as an adult, I don't really quite enjoy it as many other people do. And that's just because I think my taste in anime overall and media overall has very much changed.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I remember when Helsing was super popular, I think in high school is when I started to see stuff about it.
Yeah, around high school, middle school, yeah, because that's like the
mid-2000s,
right?
Oh, that's like the emo phase for edgy. Most people, too. Yeah.
Yes, it's the emo phase. It's the emo phase. Helsing is very, very emo. It's very dark. It's very broody. Alucard is like this badass who wields like two pistols, has a very long, iconic red coat. Red coats were a very big thing back then. There's a lot of very iconic anime characters and video game characters that wear red coats. For example, Valentine from Final Fantasy, right? Dante from Devil May Cry also wears a red long coat. So that was a very iconic thing from back then. And, you know, Alucard is supposed to be like the first vampire lord. So he has like this fear manipulation that is very iconic in a lot of series. And you'll see like snapshots of it over the internet too. So I think that's why people really stuck with Helsing for a long time. But when you go back to retroactively watch it, it's just okay.
What do you think, about the sort of usage of, because I know like it's not really your thing now and you can totally understand why it'd be your thing if you were a middle schooler, but what do you think about its overall usage of, like, you know, Alucard, which is a famous, you know, novel character, to be honest with you guys. That's why he's everywhere. But like their usage of Alucard and sort of vampirism in the story as a whole, even in the character design, really.
Personally, I think it's just like a name cash grab, if anything else, rather than weaving a very integrative story. Like, let's give the example of like Castlevania, right? Castlevania, which has actually a very good plot line from the start of season one all the way to the end of season four, where even in season one and two, it's very condensed, right? It's about the revival of Alucard from his sleep, who goes against his father, Dracula, and tries to take him down, only to realize that there's a lot of family trauma between them because his mother died, right? To humans who tortured her. But in Helsing Ultimate, at least up until the part that I watch, there's really no background behind Alucard other than he is the first vampire lord who has like basically a fear manipulation power.
Yeah.
And you're more focused on the gregarious violence rather than the impact that Alucard has as a media type of character and his background as an influence in the vampiric type of world. Other things that are really notably is like when I compare it to Castlevania is that there are other vampires that are featured in Castlevania that have their own backstory that kind of elevates their original story, right?
Right.
So for instance, you take the example of Carmilla. Carmilla is the antagonist between part 1, 2, and 3, technically 4, she dies. But part 1, 2, and 3 with Carmilla, she is a vampirist who allies herself with Dracula and then turns her back on him so that she can basically create her own vampiric empire that is basically with the ladies only. And she has a fairly complicated background that's hinted that she's very anti-men because of the way that she was treated before she was turned into a vampire, right? And that kind of fleshes out her original backstory, which is the original Carmilla novel that was inspired off of Elizabeth Bathory, the an aforementioned vampire in popular, like, socio-history type of context.
Right, yeah.
And even then, Elizabeth Bathory is now her own character with the new Castlevania Nocturne, and that in itself also kind of allows people to go into the history in the media and be like, who's Elizabeth Bathory, why she is so important, etc., etc. In Helsing Ultimate, you don't really get that sense with Alucard anyway. He doesn't have his own, I guess, backstory other than the fact that he, at one point, was a vampire lord that was defeated about 100 years ago and was now basically entered a contract with the Helsing organization, which Integra is now in charge of. She is his mistress, and therefore she gives him duties for him to complete. But otherwise, after that, there's not much.
Okay, got it. Alrighty then. Well, I guess, first of all, Isabel, you haven't been able to say anything yet because I just had a bunch of questions. So did you watch Helsing at all?
No, I didn't. So I am learning about the show. I heard it obviously when I was in middle school and high school, but I never got around to watching it. I think I just wasn't as interested in the series. And that kind of goes for me with like older series such as that. I kind of like also put it together with the original Trigun as well. And even maybe Full Metal Alchemist, because I saw those much later. And so maybe I will get around to watching it, but I haven't. I do find that Alucard, kind of like the concept of him, is interesting as well, just because I didn't realize, because I'd only seen Castlevania, like that was my first introduction to Alucard. And so it took me a while to figure out that one, Alucard is Dracula spelled backwards. And yep. Two, the fact that in the original series, the original Dracula that was written, Alucard is kind of, is actually Dracula himself, just kind of yeah. his own other version. So like, I didn't have all this background knowledge going into watching this series, but now like realizing after the fact, it makes it more interesting to see how series like Helsing has like changed what Alucard might be, or as you see it in Castlevania. You know, he's the son of Dracula. So there's so many things that you can do with just like that original concept coming from it. So, but yeah, those are my initial, at least thoughts I had.
Alrighty. So you said you did have a third one. So what's your third one then?
The third one that I wanted to spotlight was, after doing some research on that I thought was really interesting, is Irina the Vampire Cosmonaut. And this kind of goes in the line of what you were saying, that there's a resurgence in vampire type of novels or series or anime shows that kind of coincides with like Call of the Night, for example, that Isabel mentioned earlier. And the reason why I wanted to mention Irina the Vampire Cosmonaut is that it actually won in 2022, the Seiyun Award, which is a Japanese-specific award only for speculative fiction for the best science fiction works and achievements in the previous calendar years. So a lot of very notable Japanese long works that won the Seiyun Award would be like Japan Sinks and The Legend of the Galactic Heroes. Technically, Irina the Vampire Cosmonaut also won it back in, what was the year it was? In the year 2022. And I know that the anime, I don't think, stood out as much to people in when it first aired, but I just thought that the fact that it won such a big speculative science fiction award that is on par with something like Legend of the Galactic Heroes and Stupan Sings kind of makes me want to go back and watch it again too. Because Irina doesn't come off as a vampire that has vampire powers or vampire type of tendencies, but is simply a sub-race that is demonized by humans, but is interested in going to the moon and connecting with people as a result. Which kind of goes back into the whole thing that Isabel was talking about with Call of the Night, where vampires are very solitary creatures with that kind of like that kind of bit about immortality. But at the end of the day, they're kind of just bored, or they're kind of just not, they're kind of just existing without any kind of aim because of the fact that they have a long lasting immortality. And Irina, as a very young vampire, wishes to go to the moon, and marking the first as an immortal race that wants to do something instead of just kind of like, you know, like sit around and not do anything. So I thought that was kind of a slightly more interesting twist on the vampire trope than what we're used to, like in Call of the Night or in other vampire tropes like Helsing Ultimate, where it's just mindless violence.
So I'm embarrassed to say that I actually don't even know that anime, so now I'm gonna have to look
it
up.
Oh, you didn't see it?
Yeah, I've never heard of it, even.
It was airing in 2022, I think.
Oh my gosh, it must have slipped.
I think it pretty much slipped because, as we know, Crunchyroll doesn't really advertise any kind of shows anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm not really surprised. Yeah, so this actually, it didn't air in 2022. It actually aired in 2021. Mm-hmm. But I think 2021, it aired in fall 2021, and that's a super stacked season anyway, during the fall, where there's a lot of big shows that are coming out. So I'm not surprised that people kind of glossed over this series.
Well, I mean, I'll take a look at it because it won an award. You know, that always interests me. So, so yeah. Alrighty then. Well, in that case, I think it lands on me now. So I did have one on my list that got poached, but, you know, that's fine. I actually, because I had a full list of it, because I thought it was interesting how vampires have had a resurgence. And the first one I'm going to talk about is, funnily, the one that disappointed me the most, in that I think a lot could have been done with it. But I think they swung and missed the mark on the main character. So so the first one is Devil's Line. And
okay. I had a feeling you were going to at least spotlight Devil's Line somewhere.
Yeah, so Devil's Line, I still really like how they used and interpreted the vampires. I just care so little for the protagonist. I think that's where they made the mistake. The protagonist is a human girl. It's very Twilight-esque, you know, like it's a forbidden love story between a vampire and like a normal human girl. And she's like kind of a damsel in distress and stuff. So she just bored the heck out of me. So that's what made the anime a slog to watch. I mean, that and the bad animation. But at the same time, I did like how they interpreted the vampires and how they incorporated it into the story. So basically, vampirism in this world is just a genetic thing. It's in your DNA. You're born with it. And a lot of the vampires in this world, they're just normal humans who want to live normal human lives and, you know, fall in love, get married, or, you know, excel at their job and stuff like that. The only caveat is that, and they don't have to drink blood to survive. A lot of the vampires who don't drink blood at all, you can tell because they have like eye bags underneath their eyes, which just makes them look really tired, but really it's just they lack sustenance is what it is. And they can drink other blood aside from just human blood. I think there's like, I think there's networks where you can legally buy human blood or, not human blood, where you can legally buy like animal blood and stuff like that. And that's how they sort of keep up with it. But the caveat with the vampirism for them is that these vampires, they tend to lose control when they are under extreme stress or duress, whether it's emotional or physical. And sort of the thing that kickstarted this whole hunt against vampires, or really it's like discrimination against vampire people who are just living among society, is that one guy, his something really bad happened to his human fiance, who he loved dearly, absolutely planned to marry and stuff. And when he went to confront the person responsible for doing that bad thing to, I'm sure any woman listening will immediately know what I'm referring to when I say a bad thing was done to her. But basically, when he went to confront the person who was responsible for doing the bad thing, because of course he got away scot-free with it. He was a man with a lot of money and influence and already had a family and stuff. When he went to confront that man, the man kind of like laughed it off, or basically told it to his face, it's not a big deal, which understandably is very triggering and would put anyone who's had a family member or a loved one go through something like this under extreme emotional distress. And so he lost control of his vampirism, or not really lost control of his vampirism, he just lost control, and the sort of animal instincts of a vampire kicked in, and he tore them apart to pieces. Like, he killed not just the guy, he killed everyone in the vicinity, because he is completely lost control. And it ended up being like one of the worst murders that happened in world of that, of Devil's Line, and that sort of started the discrimination against vampire people. I think their usage of vampires for this was really, I really do find it fascinating, because if you hear, you know, hearing the story of what had happened to the loved one of that vampire, there's a part of you that almost like doesn't blame him for reacting the way that he did. Because I think anyone who had loved ones who were hurt by another malicious person, there's this desire to like beat them and to like hurt them in return, because you care so much. And so you end up sympathizing with what happened more than anything else. But then you can also take an outsider perspective and hear, oh, a creature with like fangs and like sharp nails and greater strength tore up a family in anger. And that's also, you can easily vilify the vampire too, if you don't bother or don't want to hear the whole story of how he got triggered to go into sort of that crazed phase in the first place. So I thought that interpretation was fascinating. I actually really loved it and how it goes into the world building. I also love the designs of the vampires, because they do actually look terrifying. Like, their fangs are so big, they can't even close their mouths properly, and their nails are genuinely like terrifying looking. And so and their eyes turn blood red when essentially their animal instincts as a vampire kicks in. And so but then on top of that, they're just normal humans who got, you know, born with this particular genetics, and they want to just be able to live completely peaceful lives like everyone else does, maybe with a little bit of adventure, maybe with some love, you know, and stuff like that. Just stuff that I think anyone can understand. And I think incorporating that into the world was just very well done, fascinating, and made it a lot more nuanced. I just wish they did a better job with the main character. I was like, they could have picked any of the other characters in the cast lineup to be the main character. Heck, they could have picked the half-vampire's parents as main characters, and I would have been completely sold on the story. So, so it's like, I have to praise it for its usage of vampires, but I can't praise it at the end of the day for the whole story, because I just did not care about the love story, and I just did not care about the protagonist at all. But I know that you guys kind of have Agnes definitely has like a bit of understanding of it already. I don't know if you watched it, Isabel, or you've heard of it.
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I read the whole manga, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh, sorry. Did Agnes say something?
Oh, I just said nice. I was like, nice.
Yeah, I actually really gobbled up that manga. I liked it a lot, probably because I read it when I was younger and just like kind of looking for something similar to Twilight.
Yeah.
But I do agree that the protagonist, the girl, really did not fit in with what I wanted. And I think that's also kind of the reason why I didn't watch the anime, just because I believe I knew what would happen, and so I didn't want to put myself through that again. But right. Otherwise, yeah, just like, yeah, I just like the, you know, difference in aspect, the, you know, fact that they're, you know, half human, half vampire type, and then having, it's kind of like that idea of same as Twilight, they're having that, you know, peaceful kind of coexistence with humans, and so seeing how that might happen and things like that, and them going after cases and things like that. But yeah, I like that. So I like the manga. I did not watch the anime. Definitely, like you said, disappointing, but could have had definitely a lot more potential if it was handled better.
It had potential. It did. I mean, So I was interested in the world enough to actually like skip around with some of the manga. And I will say the main male lead, his parents' love story kind of enraptured me. Like I really felt for them.
Yeah, definitely like the relationships between the people, even between the two main characters as well, I thought was interesting, at least when they interacted with each other. But then when everything else outside of the world comes together, it got a little messy, but mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, and I think I do remember that the two antagonists were actually one human and one vampire, and they were both men. And at the time I was dumb and I didn't realize they were a thing, even though they were like cuddling together on the couch. And now I think back to it, I was like, oh, they were a thing. And so, because Gracie was a little dumb, let's just put it simply. So,
that sounds about right.
Yeah, but anyway, Devil's Line, I really liked their interpretation of the vampires. I just wish it could have been better, but I have to give it applause where it deserves. And Agnes, I know you didn't watch or read it, but I think you've heard me talk about it, is my guess. Is that correct?
Oh, no, I've read it and watched a good chunk of it both. I never finished either, okay. But I also agree that the female lead is incredibly weak in Devil's Line as compared to a lot of the other prevailing relationships they encounter. And I think part of it is also because Devil's Line is supposed to kind of be like a shoujo type of series written in a shoujo perspective, even though I don't think Devil's Line was actually advertised as shoujo. So the female lead is always going to be very, very weak.
Especially if that time period, I think, because it's older.
Yeah. It's a self-insert shoujo protagonist, right? Mm. So I don't really have a lot of high expectations from her, but I do agree that a lot of the other stories in Devil's Line is more compelling, and it's a bit pretty much brought down because of her existence.
Yeah. All right. So that is the first one I'll highlight. The second one, you can disagree with me if you want, Isabel, because I know you're watching this anime. It's currently airing, but I've just had this thought and I can't get it out. But Ragna Crimson is currently airing, and in there, the dragons are basically vampires. You can disagree with me if you want, Isabel, but that's like how I see it.
What?
Wait, are you caught up?
No, but I never saw them as vampires. Oh, but okay.
Oops. Wait, where are you right now?
Like episode 3.
Oh gosh. No. Okay, I'm not gonna talk about it because if you're planning to watch it, it's kind of a big reveal. So I will
Interesting.
I will slowly step back from this. Pretend that this didn't happen.
Oh my god, I'm gonna watch it with a different lens now that you said that.
I'm slowly backing away from that one.
Oh no.
We can talk about
you have committed the worst of crimes, Gracie.
We can talk about it another time, so...
All right.
All right, so, but I do have an entire list, so I've got plenty more to choose from. Okay, so in this case, the second one, I'll go ahead and spotlight is actually The Vampire Dies in No Time. So it's a gag comedy, but it's a vampire gag comedy that I enjoy a lot, per se. And they're the vampires. They all have, like, very unique powers, and it's funny because blood isn't, like, really a concept there. Like, it doesn't seem like any of them really drink blood, or they claim that they're, like, attacking humans to, like, try to drink blood, but then we never see them actually do it, and it's a gag comedy. But I do find it funny because not just the vampires themselves, but the vampire hunters, they're all drawn from, like, very famous sort of vampire novels of the past, and they all just put them there as vampire hunters in almost like this multiverse situation, except they're not. They're in a single universe. And I thought that was very clever and very funny because there's the main character, Ron, as his nickname goes, but he's clearly fashioned after Alucard. And this is going to sound familiar.
Oh, yeah, the
to
red
you.
Coat. It's the red coat. Yeah, yep. I see it.
Yep.
Actually, now that I think about it, I don't think the red coat is from Alucard, but it might be from Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, and then we have a nun who's dressed in a nun outfit. I think it's like because vampires are often closely old classic vampire stories are often closely entwined with religion. And there's always, yes, like a religious figure in there who's like here to like, you know, use their purity to like, or the cross to like, you know, to purify a vampire. So there's a nun in there whose purpose is that. And so it's just like, I think it's kind of clever how they're drawing. And then there's like another vampire hunter who I think this is from like African mythology, but he's dressed like in an African sort of cultural outfit. And I believe he uses a bow and arrow instead of like the typical vampire hunter sort of weapons that we associate with European culture. So overall, I think it's just like a clever sort of multiverse way that they did where they put all like famous, like classic tropes of vampires from the days old and put them into this gag comedy instead. And really, like the vampires and the vampire hunters, they really coexist. Like there's troublemakers and the vampire hunters get annoyed and then they just beat the vampire up and then they just go back to their daily lives. And I just find the whole concept very funny. It's also very cute because Dracula is completely a wimp in this one. So he's like an opposite. He dies super easily. His main superpower is that he's utterly immortal. So he can't ever fully die. So he just collapses into sand when he easily dies. But then he just reforms and then collapses into sand and reforms. And it happens like every episode. Like if he gets scared, he essentially gets a heart attack and dies. But then he just reforms because he's utterly immortal. And so... and he ends up like living together with Ron, one of the most famous vampire hunters in the entire area, simply because he wanted to and it was convenient. And so and the two of them just hang out all the time now. It's just overall very funny and a gag comedy that I enjoyed a lot more than I wasn't expecting. So that's, I never expected vampires to work in a gag comedy, but it certainly did. I don't know if you two have ever checked out that series or, taken a glance at it.
I definitely saw it when it was, like, seen the poster when it was airing.
Right.
But I didn't really think too much about it because I think it was around the time that Iruma-kun was also airing too, maybe within that same year.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't really think that it was going to actually do super well as that kind of, like, comedy type of anime with, like, that specific type of art style.
Yeah.
So I basically passed up on it. But hearing now, I think your preference is like kind of like the comedy gag anime, Gracie, because Iruma-kun kind of falls into that category too. I'm kind of incentivized to actually watch both of them now, especially after you talk about how Dracula is supposed to be, like, you know, immortal vampire, the strongest of vampires in all of Western history. And now he's just here. He's like, boop, heart attack, dissolves into sand, comes back alive. He's like, oh, that was probably so scary. Right?
Yeah, no,
he dies. I kind of want to watch that. I really like a wimpy Dracula.
He's obviously the most powerful character in there because he's so immortal that every time he dies, he just resurrects on its own. But at this, or he'll be even alive as sand. Like, he's sand and he's talking. So he's technically still alive. So he's simultaneously the most powerful character in there and at the same time the weakest character in there because he keeps dying. So it's a very funny compare and contrast situation. But yeah, anyway, I loved it a lot. And yes, you're right, I do kind of like gag comedy. I think it depends. Like, it's just there are
well, you like, I think you like gag comedy that makes fun of other, it's a parody. You like parodies.
Yes.
Because yes. Marshall is exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right, Marshall on the fact that, you know, you don't really need magic to be the strongest character alive.
Right.
You could just be Marshall, who just uses physical force to basically turn the tides on everything.
Right, exactly.
And Uruma-kun is kind of the same way too, whereas, like, you don't need to be a demon with a lot of magical power to be the top demon in the area. You could just be a human adopted child.
Yes!
And then the same thing goes, for the vampire dies in no time, where you could be the strongest vampire but be the biggest scaredy cat in the world that you get a heart attack every single time when something happens.
Yes, that's exactly it. You
like subversion. That's what you like. You like subversion tropes. You don't like stereotypical or gregarious violence, but you like subversion at its very core.
Yes, you've got it. Thank you for defining me so well, Agnes.
I'm glad I validated you, Tracy. Congratulations.
I am.
This is a marked part about our relationship.
I am a person that exists.
Okay, Gracie, sure. You keep telling yourself that.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, my mishap aside, I hope everyone enjoyed listening to us talk about vampires as this had a resurgence in our anime media recently. Let us know of iconic vampires or usage of vampires that you've seen that you really enjoy, or just ones that you can't forget, even if you don't necessarily like it. And you can tell us at girltaku_AT on Twitter. But other than that, we will be back next week with another fun topic. So I hope you'll be here next time. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye.